Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 1 year ago today, this was the headline of a New York Times online story. Gunman kills six at a Sikh temple near Milwaukee. The shootings reverberated from this small community, Oak Creek, to Washington and beyond, including India, where the religion was founded, and many of the congregants have family ties. Tonight marks the fourth day of the Oak Creek Sikh Memorial Commemoration, which started with a 48-hour nonstop recitation of the Sikh holy book. Saturday was a very successful memorial run. Tonight, at the Sikh temple, a candlelight vigil with words from family members who lost loved ones, words from the President of the United States, the reading of names of the fallen from national tragedies, Aurora, Virginia Tech, Columbine, Newtown, and Oak Creek. Music and honored guests will give remarks. And we are honored this hour to welcome Pardeep Kalika, eldest son of Satwant Singh Kalika, the president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who was killed 1 year ago. Pardeep is an extraordinary human being, and he's very humble. He won't let you know all that he is, but I think you'll sense his soul during the course of this hour. He's a former Milwaukee police officer, a teacher in the Central City, a man of relentless optimism, and as he has just said, the biggest thing for him in life is working with kids. He works with some very tough kids to get their lives turned around, and with kids from different parts of the world who have had difficult times getting along with each other. Also joining us is Arno Michaelis. This is just a really amazing story. 6 weeks after last year's attack, Arno, who is a former skinhead, invited Pardeep Kalika to dinner. He was worried that he might have helped influence the shooter, Wade Michael Page, a white supremacist band member. And what happened is astounding. Pardeep and Arno formed Serve to Unite. They have matching tattoos that are fading now because they've been there for a year, 8-5-12 on the palms of their hands. They work to build networks of diverse interfaith youth leaders to help at-risk communities, and they're just remarkable human beings. And as you can imagine, this collaboration has been truly, truly remarkable. Pardeep, thank you so much for being with us. Arno, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your story, and I'm glad that somebody picked up on your story, the AP did yesterday, because it will now take you internationally, I would imagine. But your story is just stops people in their tracks to hear what happened, for the two of you to meet and to see what you're now doing is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I just think you're wonderful.
Thank you.
You're just wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And there is something about this. I remember this day. You really remember this day, both of mm-hmm. you. And it's a difficult one, I'm sure, for you. But there's something about the way that the Sikh community has responded to this and taught all of us, Pardeep, that you can rise above things, and that there is something to be said for love and for getting rid of hate. And if the two of you can do this, you serve as an example, don't you, even despite all this horror that you've been through?
Yeah, I mean, today started off just like last year. Didn't start off anything. I mean, nothing was out of the norm or anything. But then right around 10:24, I started thinking about where we were last year at this time. And the reason I say 10:24 is that's when the first 911 calls came through. And it was kind of hard. I was at home. And I was looking at my kids and giving them, brushing their teeth. And I just remember that morning getting my little girl ready and my son ready and, you know, getting into the car and taking them to Sunday school. And that morning, my daughter had forgotten her notebook. And thank God that she did, because that wasted about 15 minutes, give or take, on the way to the Gurdwara. And it's just a tough thing to look at your kids and have to think about what could have been. It's very hard. And that's what haunts me the most. Looking at them and realizing that, you know, we were so close. And
right. But here you are, and it's absolutely astounding what you've done in the last year. I was reading today the way your brother received the news that he got a call from your father's cell phone, right? Mm-hmm. And it was somebody calling who was not your father because he had just been shot.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being at that intersection, and me, my son, and my daughter were the first ones to get to the intersection on Rawson and Howell. And the police officer told us that, you know, we couldn't go any further down the street because there had been a shooting. And when he told me, I kind of asked him, I said, what? But I knew what he said, you know. And then I said, you know, I need to go down there. My mom and dad are both inside. I knew they both always got there early. And, you know, just as soon as I said that, phone calls started flooding my phone. And, you know, I got one from my mom. I got one from, obviously, my dad's cell phone. But my dad wasn't the one on the other line. There was a priest that was inside the bathroom at the time when the shooting was going on. And he was calling and, you know, letting us know, your dad's been shot. Hurry up and get here. And, you know, I tried to get more out of them, but it seemed like they were so panicked that they would only say a few words and then hang up. And, you know, right after that, family, friends, people just, you know, it seems like news travels faster than it's ever traveled before. And I was getting, you know, on Facebook, on everything, and I'm like, wow, you know.
And you must have been in shock, too.
Yeah, I was in shock, and, you know, you just had a feeling of helplessness. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest feeling. It's like you can't do anything. And, you know, on one hand, I have the kids. And, so, you know, the other way, I can't get through. You know, I remember there was a house on the corner of Howell and Rawson. And I was like, okay, I know how to get to the temple from the behind in the woods. And we started to go. Me and Kunwardeep Kalika, we started to travel behind the woods and start to make our way to the temple. But then I realized that it was about a mile walk, and I was like, I should probably get back to the car and try to go around again. And just a feeling of complete helplessness.
Mm-hmm. Arno, do you remember the day a year ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember hearing about it via social media, first off. At that time, I had been speaking and writing about my past since January of 2010, so I had been very grateful to develop kind of a network of people who were active in peace education, also a network of other formers. And
former what, for the audience?
Former violent extremists. Former is a term we use to kind of say who we are. I mean, our past created us. We can't forget about it, but we also acknowledge with the term former that it's behind us and that we're doing something different now. And another former white supremacist had called me as I was watching. I remember I was watching a Twitter feed that had a hashtag of Sikh temple shooting, and it was just like flying by. Mm-hmm. And tweets from all over the world, from India, from, you know, people who had family. And it was terrifying. It was also very profound. And to see how in this modern age an event can have an instant impact around the world like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my first memories of it. I remember there was a lot of speculation. When I first heard about it, the scene had yet to be cleared. There was still people talking about there being two shooters, possibly. Another friend of mine called me up and said, there's two shooters. What's going on? Later that afternoon, I just felt like I needed to do something. So I made a video response, really just talking about how everyone who was affected by this worldwide and could take action by devoting themselves to a practice of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And also to take action by being responsible for not only paying, you know, their own bills, but responsible for the society that we all share.
Mm-hmm.
And really just asking people to stop casting blame, no matter, you know, what side of the fence you're casting it from or who you're casting it at. Is when we cast blame at other people, we're casting away our ability to really change things.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my day.
And your year has been quite remarkable. At some point after the shooting, you got a hold of Pardeep, and I would have, if I had been in your shoes, would have thought, I think this guy might be the last person in the world I want to see right now. Yeah. He's changed, but he was the person who killed your father, and the other was not a former. He was a white supremacist. And I think that it's remarkable that you accepted this meeting with him and what the two of you have done together. There aren't many people in the world who are doing this kind of work, gentlemen. Tell me about deciding that you were going to meet with Arno.
The field of work I do, I obviously believe in the power of transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be teaching at an at-risk school in Milwaukee. I knew of Arnold's past, and to say that I wasn't nervous, I would be lying. I was nervous. You know, and a lot of people were like, you know, is this the smartest thing to do? You know, we had family saying it, and I said, you know, I think this will serve as what we should be doing. And it's sad to say that, like, you know, a lot of people are not doing this. It should be something that people should, you know, there's formers out there, there's former violent extremists, there's former people that have been, you know, victims of violent crimes, and they should be working together just to preach the concepts of forgiveness and compassion, and how those principles should be front and center. Not the concept of revenge. You know, I think that's almost a more normal response to people. Say, okay, well, if you bad me, I'm going to bad you even worse.
Right.
I'm going to, you know, then that's how I'm going to get over on you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep doing that, the cycle of violence never stops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we see in the inner city of Milwaukee all the time, is that there's no option, there's no choice presented to inner city youth besides the choice of, okay, I'm going to get you back even worse. And I mean, it happens on a micro and a macro level. You know, we see our government, and, you know, our government needs to take a cue from the citizens. And, you know, this needs to be, this concept of forgiveness and compassion needs to work on both sides. We need to see the middle.
This idea of transformation, I'm always amazed when it happens to people, and I'm always trying to understand it, because you want to just understand it and then allow it to happen all over. Arno, mm-hmm. It's probably really worth hearing your story of transformation, because you have a fairly large story to tell. And I would imagine when kids who have been violent or tough or going to get somebody better than they were gotten, when they hear your story, I'm sure that they have to stop and think about it. So what's your story?
Well, I was involved in hate groups for 7 years. I got involved sheerly out of teen angst. Raised in an alcoholic family, but in a very relatively well-to-do family. I lived in a nice house. I never went hungry. I never took a beating. My parents both loved me, but because their relationship was so poor, I tried to distance myself from them. And that was kind of the beginning of me lashing out as early as kindergarten. And then I found the more I lashed out, the more of a thrill I got it from it. And I also needed to keep up in the ante, as what was once stimulating was not the next day. That led me to be a very angry teenager. I started drinking myself when I was a teenager, and I got involved with white power skinheads really just as the most effective means of lashing out at the world around me. During the course of my 7-year involvement in hate groups, I hurt a lot of innocent people, and I inspired others to do that as well. I hurt my family. And I hurt myself very dearly.
I bet you did.
But what led to me leaving was a couple of catalyst events. One was becoming a single parent. And a couple months after that happened, a second friend of mine was murdered in a street fight.
Oh.
And that made me kind of really take stock of where I was and what was happening and where my daughter would be if I kept on the path I was on. However, during the entire 7-year involvement in hate groups, there were numerous times when people who I was openly hostile to treated me with kindness, despite my refusal to even acknowledge their humanity.
Mm.
So there was time and time again when black people, Jewish people, gay and lesbian people had the courage to respond to my aggression with compassion. And while those incidents didn't change me on the spot, they all kind of planted seeds that I believe put me in a position to make the right decision when that second murder happened, rather than get further into it, because it really can go either way at those moments. And thanks to some really amazing people who I didn't know back then, and for the most part, I don't know who they are today. My life has been sent in a much better direction, and I'm grateful for that every single day. And that's why it's very important to me to share my story and to kind of demonstrate the power that kindness has to literally change lives, to change this reality that we all share, and that the more of us who practice kindness diligently, the more empowered we become to treat people who most need kindness, who are also the ones who typically least deserve it. And possibly change their lives and all the lives in their past.
It's quite remarkable. And this idea of kindness and compassion is something that both of you have done with so many other human beings, that from your tragedy, you've also been extraordinarily kind to others who have experienced extraordinary tragedy as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, we've been approached by, and it seems like it's happening more and more often.
Oh, I know.
Where people, you know, that have gone through some kind of hardship in their life and want to know how to get past it. It feels like it's almost happening on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I encourage people, and I know that, you know, a lot of your audience already has this principle down. But if we commit random acts of kindness, we never know, you know, what another person is going through, what kind of misery another person is going through. You know, we judge people at face value and feel like, oh, okay, well, you know, it's just, they're normal. They're just walking down the street, you know, and it could be as simple as holding doors and things like that. But there are people in this world that are hanging on by a thread.
Mm-hmm.
And the more threads that we can give them, the better our society is going to be. You know, there's a lot of commonalities when we talk about, you know, Robbie Parker just spent the weekend with my family, him and his family.
I read about that.
Yeah, and
From Newtown. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Adam Lanza and Wade Michael Page, while it wasn't, the same motive for either one of them, the common thing is that they had lost sense of humanity. They had lost those threads that we need to hold on to. And, you know, I tell religious leaders, make it easier for people to believe in God. Do not make it that you only, you know, offer God to the ones that are already, you know, holding all the threads. I said, offer it to somebody who's suffering, who might not, just might be walking down the street, the poor, the lonely, you know, it's give people threads.
What are those threads, Pardeep?
Sometimes it's as simple as just being nice.
Hmm.
You know, just when you're at that moment, you're at that critical moment, and somebody does something for you. The other day, I had a waitress, and me, Robbie, and my brother-in-law, Darian, were out to dinner. And, I felt like I should write something on the bill. And I just wrote something nice on the bill and just gave it back to her. And, hopefully that could be a thread for her in case she's going through something. So you just put them out there. And a lot of the stuff that when Arno talks about it, I love, you know, when he talks about planting seeds, because we don't, you know, sometimes we don't stick around to, you know, to see if a seed had been, you know, is going to be growing, but we just leave it there and we plant seeds wherever we go. I mean, essentially that's kind of what we're doing today, is we're planting seeds, and I'm hoping that, you know, there's somebody out in the audience listening, and that seed, they'll plant another seed and we'll plant another seed, and we'll have that type of effect on society.
I think you are.
Thank you.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests, and here is the way to reach us. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. We're talking about, what are we talking about? Kindness. We're talking about being able to rise up after you've experienced a horror that's unimaginable. And we're talking about doing good and people from completely different backgrounds who in many cases have done wrong to each other being able to Do the Right Thing. Our guests in studio this year anniversary of the horrendous shooting at the Sikh temple near Milwaukee, Pardeep Kalika and Arno Michaelis. And together they are working with an organization, Serve to Unite, the organization counters violence with peace. They are doing work with MPS students and people from other families who have experienced violence, and really people all over the world. They recently reached out at my request to a group of people from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and without a hesitation said, sure, we'll help. So let's go to phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. We do want to remind you, and we'll ask Pardeep to give us a little more information. Today is the anniversary of the shooting at the Sikh temple, and tonight there has been a whole series of events, very, very meaningful events, runs and prayers, and tonight is a prayer vigil. The community is invited, and it should be quite a moving event. Pardeep, do you want to just tell us a little bit about when it is and what will happen?
Sure. The vigil tonight starts at 8 o'clock, ends around 10:30. It's going to be at the temple. We do have people that, you know, were involved in the Columbine shooting and, you know, all kinds of guests. I should say that Amardeep Kalika is out there, and he's trying to organize.
Your brother.
Yeah, he's trying to organize the event, so he couldn't be with us today.
Okay, I understand.
Everything's coming down to last-minute planning, mm-hmm. and, you know, rain or shine, we're going to have a vigil tonight and, you know, just to celebrate the lives of those that we lost, not as much in celebration, but, you know, as far as, like, just remember them.
Yeah. Let's go to Mary in West Bend, our first caller. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, Mary. Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate what the guests are doing, and the topic that you guys are on is just really resonating with me, what one of you said about, like, giving people threads that, I don't know, that really, really resonated with me, and I'm really appreciative of your guys' work. And I actually have been to the Sikh temple a few times, and, I mean, every time I've just been really impressed with, like, how sincere everybody is and how genuine and welcoming. I mean, it's none of the, like, underhanded, oh, let's, you know, try to convert you and tell you you're wrong. It's just very welcoming, and it just seems like you guys are just, like, doing the work of heaven here.
Thanks very much for the call. You must have noticed that too, Arno. Those of us who, in the press, who didn't know very much about the Sikh community, quite frankly, until last year, have been really moved by your community. There is a graciousness and a beauty about many of the souls I've met, and I was sorry that I encountered you so late in my life. But you must have noticed that as well, don't you, Arno? There's something unique about this community. There's something lovely about it.
Well, absolutely. I think, speaking of threads, I think it is a common thread of many immigrant populations to really come together and to draw from their traditions and their faith in order to survive in what can be a hostile environment when you're traveling across the world. And as I've known Pardeep and worked with other people in the Sikh community, it's on a daily basis. There are principles of the Sikh faith that are demonstrated to me in no uncertain terms. I recall the day after the shooting last year, I was really moved when I was watching a news piece and they were interviewing a man from Brookfield who was sick, and he was a dentist, and he was traditionally wore the turban, and they were asking him how he felt about the shooting, and rather than blame racism or blame gun violence or segregation, there's a big long list of things he could have blamed, and rightfully so in many cases. Those are all conversations that we need to have, but rather than blame anyone, he said, I think we as Sikhs could do a better job of letting the community abroad know who we are and what we're about. And that was incredibly powerful to me. It was inspirational in the sense of seeing a person who just had his entire community and his tradition assaulted in such a grievous way say, what can I do better to prevent this from happening in the future? And that's very much the mindset that Pardeep and his family have and everyone from the Sikh community have is that they're not going to lower themselves to respond to violence with more violence. Instead, they're going forth in rising spirit, in the spirit of Charikala, which is essentially relentless optimism. Mm-hmm. Even when things seem bleakest, it's the time to find a reason to be grateful to be alive and to be thankful for your existence. And that's something that I take inspiration from every day.
I like that phrase, relentless optimism. Mm-hmm. I think I've used that.
I mean, after August 5th, the reason I said that story initially about, you know, driving to the temple that day on August 5th, I wanted to paint a picture of what people were going through that morning, and all the direct victims of families that lost loved ones have a story similar to that one. But I think us as a community that day, we sort of made a decision that we're not going to let this define us, first of all, and second of all, we're not going to be known as victims. We're going to be known as survivors. And being known as a survivor means that you take responsibility for what happened and you take as much ownership for what happened and you keep it from happening to anybody else. And I think, you know, I'm incredibly proud of not only the Sikh community, but the entire overall greater Milwaukee, Wisconsin national community.
Thanks, Mary, so much for your call. Let's go to Kaiser in Germantown. Hi, Kaiser.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good, thank you. I am a Muslim from Pakistan who happens to be from a city where one of the Sikh shrines is located. And so my exposure to Sikh people and the religion has been a lot more than a typical, what you people you meet on the street. And, you know, I mean, what I want to tell other people is, you know, this is the most kind, compassionate, you know, inclusive of other religions, loving and fun, giving, full of life, peace-loving religion that I know about, that I have come across. And you know, if you meet, you know, somebody from Sikh religion, which I, you know, obviously I am from the Punjab state of Pakistan, so we speak the same language. So if, let's say if I was traveling in Thailand and I in a restaurant met this gentleman, and within 5 minutes it didn't even seem like that we were strangers, and we were very comfortable. And I wish that, you know, after 9/11 we had more people like Pradeep, you know, as Muslims who had done a better job in explaining the position of the 99.99% of the rest of the Muslims, because at that time, you know, all of the Muslim community was thrown into this, you know, okay, they're all, you know, like this. I wish we had people like these gentlemen who came out and explained to everybody what their religion is, what their beliefs are. I mean,
thank you very much, Kaiser, for your call. I think those voices do need to be stronger. He makes a valid point. And maybe the media isn't willing to accept those, too. They prefer the more divisive voices. It makes for a better story or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, Arno, you want to respond to him?
Yeah, and it was really beautiful the way he described the Sikh people he
yes.
knows. And I just want to say I know a lot of Muslim people who I describe the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
I still have anger management issues. I'm still kind of a combative person. And nowadays when I confront Islamophobia, it's very difficult for me to not lose my temper because I know so many amazing Muslim people who are some of the kindest, gentlest, most compassionate people I've ever met, and also many of whom risk their lives on a daily basis to help foil terrorism and to help make the world a safer place. So I don't know that it's an issue of Muslims not doing a better job. I think it's in many cases the media and people tend to find what they're looking for. Mm. So if you want to find a reason to paint Muslims with a broad brush, you can do that. You could also do the same if you want to find a reason to paint Christians with a broad brush. It's really a matter of being mindful of what you're looking for and why. And if you look for reasons to be inspired by Islam and to appreciate its value to humanity and to the earth, you'll find that as well.
Yeah. Well, point well taken. Thanks, Kaiser, for the call. Boyd sends an email. When you counsel young people, what advice do you give them when you feel they may be venturing down a path where they could be drawn to an extremist group or to violence, gang or whatever, or group that could be viewed as a cult-like in nature? What do you do with the young people? Pardeep? Well,
a lot of young people want to be they don't want to be followers. They want to be leaders. So first off, we try to empower our youth and let them know that, you know, anybody can become a leader. And, you know, use words like, you know, leadership. Part of our Serve to Unite chapters is the word leadership. Next thing is that you try to get them to understand the value of being immovable. A lot of times, if somebody says something to you about on social media, that's what it seems like we've been getting a lot of fights about lately in our schools. Is that
really?
You know, you said something to me on Facebook, or you talked about me on Facebook. Hmm. You know, we present them with the challenge of, you know, who's in control. Well, if you allow this person to say something bad to you, and you respond with more hate and more anger, and you say something back to them, well, essentially that other person is in control, right? And we try to get them to say, okay, well, let me be immovable. Let me be in this stage of I feel good about myself, so whatever you kind of say about me, and it sounds cliche, but then it's powerful when we say, okay, well, you know, this is what happened to me, and this is the position that we took, and this is the benefits of taking this position, and you can do it too. And it's kind of hard to challenge that when you're, you know, you say, okay, now you're having a Facebook quarrel with somebody, and then it sounds kind of silly, but you know that's kind of what we try to present, you know, make them leaders and try to make them immovable.
Yeah, let's go to Ray in Milwaukee next. Our number, by the way, lines are open. They've been busy. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are speaking with Pardeep Kalika, eldest son of Satwant Singh Kalika, who was shot at the horrendous event last year, a year ago to this day, at the Sikh temple. Also, Arno Michaelis is with us. Arno is a former white supremacist who invited Pardeep to dinner. And a result of that is what appears to me to be a pretty deep friendship. And also this remarkable group, Serve to Unite. They are working with kids who may be in gangs. They are working with young people to in at-risk communities to get them to learn kindness and have better lives. So, did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Ray in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Kathleen, and hello to your guests. The two guests are very inspiring. I was born on October 2nd. So was Gandhi, who is my greatest hero of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And his view of violence, and he would counsel people who had committed violence in his area. He would counsel them that there's always a way to resolve this, even if maybe you've committed murder. Gandhi said, never give up on yourself. You can always change, and that change has to come from within. And this is what I want to speak about. Your guests have talked eloquently about violence within our own country. Does this also reflect their views on our government's use of violence around the world? And when will we see the guests at a peace march, which is anti-war? Because if you speak the way you speak, and it sounds like you're talking from your hearts, I know that both of you are also against the war, even without asking you this question, but I must ask it. Will we see you at the peace rallies that are against war in this country, like when we're drone bombing an innocent village in Pakistan?
Arno.
Thank you, Ray. And I share your admiration of Mohandas Gandhi and his approach. And I've been at plenty of peace rallies. I admire all the people who attend them and organize them. I know their intentions are very genuine, and I think it's a very important means of expression to let our government and the powers that be know that the citizenry is not happy with this perpetual state of war the United States has been in since before day one. Personally, though, I'm not a protester or a parader or a marcher. I found over many years that, to me, what was the most effective use of my time is to spend it, as much of it as I can, working one-on-one with people who are struggling. And doing that gets a lot of attention. As you know, I'm thankful to you, Kathleen, for having us on this program and the AP article. And when our story gets broadcast, it reaches people like Ray and mm-hmm. others who kind of can broaden that sense of compassion. And I think without being rooted in compassion, it's real easy for protests to become outrage and just dwell on it. And if you're so angry at the government for what they're doing and you're just cultivating anger and aggression, you're really not doing anything to help the situation. So if war truly bothers you, I think in addition to parading and protesting, it's very important to cultivate compassion on a day-to-day basis.
Very interesting answer. Pardeep, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'm going to give a little story about what happened after August 5th. After August 5th, there was protests that started in India with flag burnings happening. And the protesters obviously thought that they were being productive. And they thought that, you know, this would be, you know, how they would be heard. And you have to sometimes be careful with that because, you know, sometimes when we protest, it becomes outrage. So that day when I found out that, you know, flag burning was going on, I asked my mom, who is fluent in Punjabi and Hindi, I said, "Mom, can you make an announcement to India to stop the flag burning?" And in the midst of, you know, grieving,
oh my goodness,
she got up off the couch, wiped her tears, and walked up to the camera, broadcast to India that we will not burn flags because this is not what the United States is about. And that obviously that doing that day, that helped our mission. You know, that helped me and Arnold's mission as far as and served United's mission and the whole Sikh community's mission to right. practice peace, because that could have all undercut everything. With protests, they have to be productive. You know, obviously, if war is the last resort of any civilized country. War, actually, you know, the easiest way to recruit terrorists is to wage war on a country and kill moms and dads and innocent children, and especially with the bombing of drones. So, I mean, we're going to support, you know, not going to war.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you, and I believe that tonight there will be a presence by a group of people who are concerned about guns. If anybody has a right to be concerned about guns, it's people in your community in Newtown and Columbine and Boston, etc.
Yeah.
You do get, is it fair for me to say, semi-political with that issue? Is it? Well, it's not really a political issue if you look at it that way. It's a safety issue. It's a life and death kind of issue. But you are concerned about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being a former police officer, I own guns. But that doesn't mean that everybody should be allowed to own guns. You know, we need to take a good look at what we want our country to be and listen to the middle ground. You know, it can be a polarizing issue, but like you said, it doesn't really need to be. It needs to be a safety issue.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. Ray, thanks so much for your call. We'll take more of them in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder tonight, 8 o'clock, the Candlelight Village at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin parking lot. And what's that address, Pardeep?
7501 South Howell. 7512 West Howell.
7512.
Yep.
Howell Avenue in Oak Creek, Wisconsin.
In Oak Creek, Wisconsin.
It's open to everybody and should be quite meaningful. Let's go to Christy in Franksville. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say hi to Pardeep and Arno again. We met in December at an event at the South Shore Cinema designed to bring the Sikh community and, you know, the greater area together. And it was the first time I was meeting anybody in the community there, and I was just blown away with, with Pardeep and Arno and their stories and their great union now. And also with the information that Valerie Kaur and Sharat Raju brought with them from Connecticut. They had shown a couple of films, American Made and an Oak Creek In Memoriam movies that they had put together. And I know that Valerie's Groundswell movement has made this available online as well. And I thought people might be interested in seeing those.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let us know more about that, and we'll put that announcement on our Facebook page. Pardeep.
Just to let you know, Valerie will be there tonight, and nice to hear from you, Christine. So tonight, Valerie Kaur will be there. Sharat, they're both doing amazing work with Groundswell.
Tell me a little bit more about Groundswell. What is it doing?
Groundswell is a site that sort of shines a light on injustices happening around the world.
Okay. The other thing, I don't want to get too far away from home, even though this story is all over the world, and it takes in various parts of the world and different faiths, and you're working with people, I know, in Northern Ireland and elsewhere. But a lot of the work that you're doing, and I've seen just a glimmer of it, is with pretty tough kids who go to Milwaukee Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And I'd like for you, and I believe that last week or the week before, you got a go-ahead to do a much more major project with MPS. What is that? What is the day-to-day work that you both do, Arno?
Yeah, we're very excited to launch a official pilot of our Serve to Unite student leadership program in 4 Milwaukee Public Schools for the 2013-2014 school year. This is with the collaboration of school superintendent Dr. Gregory Thornton, as well as the sponsorship of Arts at Large, which is a really amazing nonprofit that's empowered Serve to Unite to be in this role. We will be working with middle school and high school students, sharing our stories, but also taking it back to the global scale. We involve partnerships with Against Violent Extremism, which is the organization that through which Pardeep and I met, as well as another amazing organization called the Forgiveness Project, both of whom are peopled by some really incredible formers and survivors from around the world who have their own inspirational stories to tell, and who are very involved in peace efforts wherever they are. And we bring these people into the classroom to meet our student leadership chapters to kind of demonstrate that people are going through the same struggles all over the world. And if we get together and support each other and compare notes, we can find more effective solutions to these struggles. And it's also very important for, say, a kid from the inner city who's it can be real hard to visualize the world beyond the block you live on when you're dealing with those kind of struggles. And and so to connect them with these other global efforts is very empowering, and that's part of what we're doing with our Serve Unite leadership chapters. And listeners now can go to serve2unite.org. That's with the number 2. And help us make this happen by participating in a fundraising effort we have to provide the budget for this program.
Great. Serve to Unite.
Yep. Serve2unite.org with the number 2.
Great. Let's go next to, thanks, Christy, for the call. Jake in, we're running short on time, too. Jake in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Yeah. I kind of looking at this at a bigger national scale, and ever since Barack Obama's been elected, people on the right side of the aisle have been cultivating basically white fear and hate against other races per se, mainly black, but it goes to everyone else, like immigrants and everyone else, in order to use that in their politics in order to get it elected, because that's pretty much the only thing they have to go on. But those are very strong emotions, and you can see how it works even in a closer county, and that is, and that's mainstream. So I was just wondering what you guys think about that, because I think things are going to change and get better, but I think before it happens, it is going to get worse.
Pardeep.
Sure. Yeah, fear, I mean, fear is sort of the, I guess, the root cause of a lot of this, a lot of what happened on August 5th. Fear leads to suffering and isolation. The reason we wanted, I mean, the reason our program is so important is that we get students to think about things outside of them and actually have another thread. I think with Barack Obama and, you know, fear-mongering, it's going to happen on either side. When George Bush was in office, it's going to happen. Barack Obama, I'm sure it's going to happen with the next. There has been an increase in hate groups and organizations since Barack Obama has been in office, and that is very concerning. But, I mean, I think we just all need to do our part as far as teaching and educating the other side.
Thanks, Jake, for the call. How hard has this weekend been for you, Pardeep? Today in particular, is this anniversary getting to you?
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
I would imagine.
Tell you the truth. It's hard. It's been my birthday. It was my birthday a couple days ago.
Oh, it was your birthday?
Yeah. So.
Oh, happy birthday.
One of my last memories was when my dad was feeding me cake using a butter knife. He oftentimes used instrument. You know, he should have used a fork, but he was an improviser. But it was a fond memory. And the 4th, obviously, I went to Chicago on the 4th, and the 5th that morning, I was going to see him at the temple. And so the 3rd, my birthday, was my last time I actually saw him and saw him playing with the kids. So it's been a hard weekend. I know, not just on me. I know it's been hard on all the victims.
I'm sure.
They're going through their own grief, and I don't want to forget about Punjab Singh, who's still, in a vegetative state. I know this weekend is hard on Arno. We all went through our personal struggles at the time, but also as a community. And I know when he's talking, he's struggling sometimes to say the words. That's because everything on this weekend is personal for him, and so is this mission. Sometimes when we watch the news, we become a little desensitized. And I know after August 5th, it's hard for me to watch the news because everything is my fault. I know Arnold kind of feels the same way. Everything is his fault. Maybe that's a bad way to take it, but I feel like that's the way you change things too, is that everything needs to be everybody's fault.
Well, here's to both of you. Your story is just, I've done this for 38 years, and there are certain stories that just stay with you. And thank you. I was mentioning a group of teenagers who were here every month from Belfast for the last 40 years, and I know you worked with them and did so and made a lasting impression on their lives as well. This idea of threads is good, and I think that I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much. All the best to you. We'll stay in touch. We want to know what you're up to.
Thank you, Kathleen. Yeah.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Pardeep Kalika and also Arno Michaelis, their organization is Serve to Unite. They're doing absolutely wonderful work in many parts of the world, actually. And particularly here in Milwaukee. We thank them. There's more information about that organization on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. The vigil is tonight. Candlelight Village Vigil starts at 8 o'clock this evening. And the public, of course, is cordially invited.